Let's get started, everybody. Okay, so the two shailas that we will discuss, one of them this week, are as follows. Shaila number one is, I got the following email from a Talmud. Hi, Rebbe, I hope that you and your family are doing well. Mazel tov on your son's recent wedding, okay? It's hard to believe that your kids are getting married already. Okay, we got past that. Anyway, I had a shaila, and I am not sure if it is a question of halacha or a question of hashkafa. As you probably know, my wife and I recently bought a house in, I'm not going to say the neighborhood, a neighbor invited us for, and he puts in quotes, Bane. I had never heard of Bane, but apparently it means, has anyone here ever heard of Bane? Apparently it means that people go for Erev Shabbos drinks about a half hour before Shabbos. Apparently it is common in this community for people to enjoy cocktails and a little chalent and kugel too in the last moments before Shabbos begins. Something doesn't seem right about this, but I'm not sure exactly what the problem is. Is this mutter? Is it not advisable? One of the guys said that he thinks that there's an inyan to dafka do this. Is that true? So that is shaila number one. Shaila number two. I got a phone call from a moel the other day, and he told me that he was asked to do a bris for a baby with hemophilia, which, you familiar with hemophilia? So that's hemophilia, it's a blood clotting disorder where the blood doesn't clot and a person could bleed to a dangerous degree if they cut themselves. Happens to be that nowadays we have blood clotting agents that help with these kinds of things, and there are treatments that you could do. So it's not really such a shaila. We do a bris generally with a baby with hemophilia, although that's not so pashut either, meaning yesh ladin whether you should do a bris with a baby with hemophilia. Because if you were to ask Ravina and Ravashi, should you do a bris on a baby with hemophilia, what would they tell you? Absolutely not. Pikuach nefesh. No way. Right? So does the halacha change just because we have blood clotters? Or do we say that the halacha has to stay the same as it was in the time of the Gemara? But that wasn't his shaila. His shaila was as follows. Both of the baby's older brothers also have hemophilia. They did a bris on the two older brothers, and they were treated with blood clotters, and they were okay. This baby, though, was born on Shabbos. And they know that this baby is also a hemophiliac, and they want to know if they should do the bris on Shabbos. Should such a mila be docha Shabbos? What's the shaila? Whether such a mila should be the manavshach? If you don't do the bris, don't do the bris. If you do a bris, then do it on Shabbos. Why wouldn't you do it on Shabbos? So apparently, as soon as they do the bris, the baby is going to become a chola in a serious way, and they therefore have to treat the baby right away with infusions and things like that, and the baby needs to be monitored in a hospital, and it's very, very, very likely, if not a certainty, that there's going to have to be a chol Shabbos immediately after the bris in order to treat the baby after the bris. So do you do a bris on the baby knowing that very likely there's going to be a chol Shabbos involved in the aftermath of that bris and the treatment of the baby? So those are our two shailas. So shaila number one about having Bane, I don't know what that is, but you know, now I know what it is, about having cocktails and chalent and kugel within the last half hour or hour before Shabbos, so you can greet Shabbos with the proper amount of intoxication. And second, Shaila was about the bris of the baby with hemophilia and whether such a bris should be done on Shabbos. So we'll ask the Zoomers to vote and the okay. So all those here who would prefer shaila number one. All those here who prefer shaila number two. Okay, shaila number one looks like it's the winner over here, and it is the unanimous winner on the Zoom. So I guess we're going with shaila number one. Okay, so shaila number one. I mean, you know, is it a shaila lahalacha or is it a shaila nashkafa? Are there halachic issues over here? So the answer is it's both, right? It's shaila nahalacha and nashkafa. What? So we have the issue of eating before Shabbos, eating stam before davening mincha, which, okay, we're making a lot of things and eating for davening, but we'll have to talk about eating before Shabbos. What else do we have to talk about?
Praying when you're drunk.
Praying when you're drunk, right? What else? So he did mention that there's some sort of inyan, some mitzvah of te'ima or something. So what's that about, right? Is there really such a thing that there's such an inyan that you should dafka have, like, it's like a kiddush, except there's no kiddush because it's before you can make kiddush. It's before Shabbos. But they like to have such a thing. And from what I hear, after doing a little bit of research and asking around, this is being done in a lot of neighborhoods, especially this was like a COVID thing. A lot of people in a number of places didn't like not having the social outlet of shul when shuls were shut down, or not having the social outlet of a shul kiddush when shul kiddushes were or still are in some places shut down. So they started this thing that an Erev Shabbos is outdoors in their backyard. They make a whole barbecue, you know, and they grill some, throw some hot dogs and hamburgers on the grill, and they have hot dogs and hamburgers Erev Shabbos, or sometimes steaks and whatever else on Erev Shabbos, the last hour before Shabbos, with some cocktails and whatever. So is there anything against the halacha about this? So let's talk about first the potential positive, right? This inyan of tasting food before Shabbos, and then we'll get into all the negatives and all the halachic problems, and then the hashkafic problems with this as well, right? Okay, so let's start with the tasting Shabbos food. The Mishnah Berurah in Siman Reish Nun and Sivkat and Beis writes that there is a mitzvah to taste the Shabbos food on Friday. The Mishnah Berurah suggests that the reason it's done is to ensure that the food is suitable for eating, and if it needs to be fixed, you can still fix it on Erev Shabbos. It needs a little raw, it needs a little more cooking or whatever, something you could take care of, a little more spicing, something that you'll be able to do on Erev Shabbos. Also, the Machzor Vitri quotes a passage in the Talmud Yerushalmi that seems to give great value to tasting Shabbos food on Friday afternoon, and the idea is that you're trying to extend the sanctity of Shabbos, and you allow it to affect your week. And in the merit of doing so, the Yerushalmi says, person will have arichus yamim, that just like he's taking the Kedusha of Shabbos and expanding that beyond its normal boundaries, so too he should be zocha to arichus yamim. So there are two inyanim over here of the tasting Shabbos food before Shabbos. One is a very practical one, that you taste Shabbos food before Shabbos just to make sure it tastes good, to make sure that, you know, to prepare for Shabbos properly and make sure that the food is good for Shabbos. That, in this case, does not seem to be what's happening. It seems that people are just fressing on food that is not their Shabbos food, and adraba, they're going to be so full, they're not going to be able to eat normal Shabbos food when they get to their Shabbos meal. So that is certainly not an inyan that is being fulfilled over here. The second inyan, the Machzor Vitri says from the Yerushalmi, that by tasting the food on Friday afternoon, you're extending the sanctity and the Kedusha of Shabbos. If people are doing this, L'shem Kedusha Shabbos, that this is the way that they're greeting Shabbos, maybe you could argue that such a te'ima would fit into that category, but what they seem to be doing is not really a te'ima, meaning both according to the Machzor Vitri and according to the simple approach of the Mishnah Berurah, it seems to be that it's a te'ima that they were, that you would do. Te'ima means a little bit of a taste. In fact, there's even a discussion, if you're only tasting to adjust the flavor, do you even say a bracha on such a te'ima? In Or Chaim Siman Reish Yud Sif Beis, Shulchan Aruch Paskins, that you do not recite a bracha on a te'ima ba'alma, as in any case where a bracha is not necessary. If you were to then say a bracha, it would be a bracha levatala, and it would be aser. But if there's inherent value in the eating, and it's not just about tasting for possibly adjusting the food, then you'd have to say a bracha. So the chara, it's best for a person to taste Shabbos food on Friday to have in mind that he's also eating a little bit and not just having a te'ima. But it shouldn't be much more than that. Meaning it should be, yeah, I'm tasting the food for Shabbos, but I'm also enjoying, I'm also, you know, you ever grilled chicken, you know, for Shabbos? There's nothing like fresh grilled chicken, right? So, okay, so maybe if there are 10 pieces on the grill, only 9 pieces go back into the house. You know, there's one piece that makes its way into your mouth before it gets, okay, so that's a te'ima, and it's a, you know, you're a little hungry, didn't have a lunch on Shabbos afternoon. Okay, such a thing would not be so problematic. What about the problems over here? What about eating on Erev Shabbos? So Shulchan Aruch, in Siman Reish Mem Tes and Or Chaim Sif Beis, Paskins like the Rambam, that a person is not allowed to eat a meal of any sort within three hours of Shabbos, and you're not allowed to eat a larger than average meal at all on Friday afternoon, meaning after Chatzos on Friday, no larger than usual meal, and even a usual meal is not allowed within 3 hours of Shabbos. And there are three reasons given by the Poskim for limiting one's diet on Friday and for not eating too much on Friday. Shulchan Aruch says that it's in order to keep you hungry for the Shabbos meals, which is what Rashi writes in Maseches Gittin as well. So Shulchan Aruch seems to assume that way, to keep you hungry. So if the halacha is designed to discourage filling your stomach prior to Suda Shabbos, so it stands to reason that it should be a similar halacha prior to the Shabbos morning meal. In fact, the Bir Halacha in Reish Mem Tes writes that there's even more reason to aser participating in the Shabbos morning Kiddush before davening than in eating before Shabbos in advance of the Friday night meal, because the time right before Shabbos isn't yet the time that you're actually obligated to Suda Shabbos. Shabbos morning after davening is already the time for Suda Shabbos. It's already a time where you could be doing Suda Shabbos. So if you're going to eat then, that would be even worse if you're going to overeat at that point, to the point where you're not going to be able to eat. So a person should be careful not to eat too much at a Shul Kiddush if they're not counting that as a Suda Shabbos. If they have challah rolls or whatever and you're using that as your Suda Shabbos, good. But otherwise, probably shouldn't eat so much at a Shul Kiddush either. So eating on Erev Shabbos wouldn't be as problematic as eating on Shabbos morning prior to the meal. So that's what the Bir Halacha points out. So that's one issue with eating a meal on Erev Shabbos. Second issue, Mishnah Berurah writes, the Mishnah Berurah Sifkat Yud over there says that if a person eats on Friday, he's likely to neglect his responsibility for preparing for Shabbos, meaning Friday is a busy day. Friday, you're allowed to be running around and doing that you're supposed to be busy on Erev Shabbos. The mitzvah of Kavod Shabbos demands that a Jew takes time on Friday to prepare the house for Shabbos, prepare everything that's needed for Shabbos. If you're caught up in a major meal, you're not going to designate the proper amount of time for preparation for Shabbos. The person's going to tell his wife, see you later, I got to go an hour early because I got to stop by my buddy where we're going to have some drinks and some barbecue, and then the house is a mess and everything. So he's not fulfilling his obligation of preparing for Shabbos. Third, the Bir Halacha writes in Dibur Maskul Mipnei that the primary reason is not only that one should be hungry going into Shabbos, but that having a Friday meal that rivals the Shabbos meal shows an inherent disrespect for Shabbos by equating it with a normal weekday. Meaning, what are you going to do? You're going to Friday night, you'll have a little, tiny little piece of chicken and whatever you're going to be able to put there. But on Shabbos, Friday afternoon, that's where there are steaks coming off the grill. That's where there's fresh sushi. That's where so you're going to have this major meal on Friday afternoon. Then you're going to go into Friday night. You're not going to be hungry. You're not going to have such a major meal. So it's disrespectful to the Shabbos meal by having a meal on Friday that's going to rival the Shabbos meal. So for all of those reasons, we paskin in Shulchan Aruch that within 3 hours before Shabbos, one is not supposed to eat a meal. You're not supposed to eat something that is a reasonable meal. Now, the Ramah in our Chaim Sim Reshmem Tesef Beis writes that you are allowed to have a larger than normal meal on Friday if the meal is made in honor of a Bris Milah or a Pidyon HaBen. The Mishnah Berurah explains that even a Bris Milah that's taking place after the eighth day, even if it's not a Milah B'Zmanah, you could do it on Friday because you're allowed to delay, you're not allowed to delay performing the mitzvah any more than is absolutely necessary, so you would still do the Bris on Friday. So the day of the Milah is considered the day that the Milah must be done. Pidyon HaBen also, even after the baby is 30 days old, you don't delay it any further. So the Su'udah that takes place that would accompany it is a Su'udah's mitzvah, and therefore you could do it on a Friday. It's interesting, not all poskim hold that you could do a Milah Shelo B'Zmanah on a Thursday or a Friday. There are poskim that hold you can't even do a Milah Shelo B'Zmanah at all on a Thursday or a Friday. The Shach in Yarden, Simon Reish Samach Vav Sivkat Yilches, discusses whether a delayed bris should be pushed off until Sunday so as to avoid any chance of having to be Mechal Shabbos in order to care for the newly gemalt baby. But the norm of Pesach is for a delayed Milah to be done on Friday, if that's the earliest time that you were able to do the Mila. If the baby is ready for Mila before Friday, so the Debuda says that the Mila can't be delayed to the end of the week because that's likely going to cause a need for Chol Shabbos. I mean, the Debuda gives a little bit of a nod to not doing a Mila Shalom B'Zmanah on Friday by saying that if the baby was really ready on Tuesday and you just pushed it further, then you're not allowed to do it on Friday. Then you're going to have to wait till after Shabbos, till the beginning of the next week. Because why did you push it off? You shouldn't have pushed it off. That's what the Debuda writes in Madura Tinyana, Simin Kuf Samach Vav. Now, aside from the types of Sudas Mitzvah mentioned by the Ramah, Bir Halacha says if you have a Sima Sechta with a large Su'ud on Friday, you're allowed to do that. And Bir Halacha assumes that a Siyum is ideally held at the earliest possible time and shouldn't be delayed, so you might as well do it on Friday. Whatever the Su'udas Mitzvah is that you're allowed to celebrate on Friday, Mishnah Berurah says better to do it in the morning rather than do it Friday afternoon, meaning the absolute worst time of the week to eat in a heavy way is Friday afternoon. That's clear in the Halacha. So if you have a Su'udas Mitzvah and you're going to have a larger than normal meal on account of a Suda's mitzvah, you should do it on Friday morning. Now, it is mutter to eat a light snack at any time on Friday and even eat a normal meal early in the day. However, the Torah quotes that there are many tzaddikim that fast each and every Friday. And the Torah points to a Gemara in Erev in Daf Mem Beis, where the Gemara discusses whether people like the children of Rav, who fast on Friday, are allowed to complete their fasts until Shabbos comes. But regardless of the answer to that question, the very mention that Rav's children would do that on a weekly basis is l'chora an indication that it was a praiseworthy practice to do that to fast on Friday. So Beis Yosef is not sure why the Torah would quote the question regarding Rav's children as the source for this minhag of fasting on Friday. There's an explicit passage in Talmud Yerushalmi that one of the holy Amoraim fasted every Erev Shabbos. So Beis Yosef is somewhat perplexed why the Torah doesn't just quote that enough in the Yerushalmi rather than quoting a Shaila about Rav's children. But you know, we don't recommend that practice necessarily, that everyone should fast on Friday. But you certainly see that it's inappropriate for people to be eating significantly on Friday. Certainly Friday afternoon, you shouldn't be eating too much. So that's Aleph, right? Meaning, should you be having major food on Friday late afternoon? Absolutely not. Food that's going to rival your Suda Shabbos, that may even be better than your Suda Shabbos? Absolutely not. What about drinking before davening? What if it's they're not having so much food, it's maybe a few crackers or whatever, but they're really just having drinks, that there's someone making cocktails, mixing drinks, or someone, I don't know, whatever the practice is, or maybe they're having scotch, I don't know what they drink, whatever it is that they're having. So, and then you go straight into Kabbalah Shabbos, right? Then you go straight to Mincha, Kabbalah Shabbos and Mariv. So there's a Gemara in Erev and Daf Samach Daled that says not to paskin when you drank a revius of Yayin, and distinguishes when it comes to davening. When it comes to davening, says that a shasui, if somebody can still speak in front of a king, he could be omer lefnei melech, he shouldn't daven, but his tefillah still counts. So if a person drank, but he still, when he talks, like you can't really tell that he drank, but he drank, so he shouldn't daven, but at least if he davens, it's a kasher tefillah. A shikr, somebody who's not able to be medaber b'fnei HaMelech, his tefillah is a toeva, and it's like a vodazara. That's what the Gemara says. So if a person is mamash shikr, when he goes into a tefillah, the tefillah is a toeva. So much so, Tosos and Dibra Maske Shikr over there, Mesach Zerv and Daf Samach Dalid, says, and if he davened, he has to daven again. Right, if the shikur davened, he has to daven again. In Yom Adiyom, Purim is coming up. A lot of times people violate this for Mariv on after Purim, that their mamash shikur, they shouldn't be davening. You'd have to daven again if you're mamash shikur. The Beis Yosef in Siman Sadi Tes proves from a Gemara and Brachos Daf Tes that not davening on account of intoxication is an onus. It's not considered amazing. Now there is a machlokas in the Rishonim. What if a person just had a revius? Just barely, just a revius of yayin. So the Rif has a girsa that al yispalu, that even if a person only had a revius of yayin, al yispalu. Tosos, however, writes that it must be about paskening, because Gemara talks about das tzulula, and you don't need such clarity of mind to daven. You're just talking to Hashem. But when you have, when you're paskening, you need to have judgment, and you need more das tzulula. So there is this machlokes Rishonim. Bottom line is Psak Halacha. Shulchan Aruch writes in Siman Sadi Tes Sif Aleph that if you drank more than a revius, you shouldn't daven. A revius is not that much; it's a few ounces. So I don't know, and with cocktails, very often there's higher alcohol content than you would have in a revius of yayin. Right? What's yayin? How much alcohol is there in yayin? So if you have a really strong yayin, it's 13% alcohol, 14% alcohol. You can't have more than that in yayin, really. It doesn't work, I think. I don't know the science behind it, but it doesn't work. So there's wine is never more, but you have these cocktails sometimes. Half of it is vodka. Vodka's like, it's every cocktail is vodka and, right? It's vodka and some sweet, if you like the girly cocktails. I don't know if that's the appropriate terminology, but it's vodka and something red, vodka and something orange, vodka. But it's all just vodka and that stuff is has high alcohol content. So if you drink more than a revius, Shulchan Aruch says in Siman Sadi Tes, you shouldn't daven. But if you're so bad that you can't even speak in front of a king, then not only shouldn't you daven, but you'll have to daven again. Even if by not davening you're going to miss the zman, you should just make it up as it feels tashlumin, as if you missed b'shogeg. The Mishnah Berurah, however, adds that obviously, if you start drinking right before the end of the zman, then it's amazing and you can't do tashlumin. So if a person drinks to the point on Erev Shabbos, right before mincha on Erev Shabbos, and they're going to shul daven mincha right toward the end of the zman, it's amazing. Not only is he not allowed to daven, but even if he doesn't daven, he follows the halacha, and he doesn't daven, he's not going to be able to do tashlumin at Mariv because it's his fault. The Mordechai writes that people aren't so makbe nowadays about making up such a tefillah because people don't have kavana anyway in the tefillah. So we're concerned. We're always concerned about davening making up a tefillah if you davened in properly the first time, because you're probably going to daven in properly the second time also, right? That's always the concern. So at the end of the day, la halacha, there are four levels of drinking. The Piskei Tshuvos and Simtzat HaTes has a summary of what of these four levels of drinking. There are four levels of drunkenness. Number one, if you have less than a revius, or even a full revius, but it's in the context of a su'uda, and you're clearly unaffected by it. The Mishmur of Sivkat and Beis writes, you can even daven l'chadchila. So if you have less than a revius, or a revius with a lot of food, so then you're allowed to daven l'chadchila. But again, you're not allowed to eat a lot of food on Erev Shabbos at this time. If you drink a revius and you can still speak clearly, don't daven until you feel the effect has worn off. But if the zman will pass, then you could daven, but still best to daven from a sitter. And if you drink enough to affect your speech, or that you're not walking straight, then you can't daven even if the zman is going to pass. The Mishnah Berurah says not to count such a person in a minyan. Kaf HaChaim is mekel. What would be the svara to be mekel to count a person like that in a minyan? You can count a sleeping person in a minyan, right? So a person like that. Now the counter svara is you wake up a sleeping person, meaning you can snap out of it. You can't undrunk a drunken person. That's going to take time. So that's a discussion in the poskim. If the person who drank enough that it affects his speech, if he davens, it doesn't count. He's going to need to daven again when he sobers up. L'chadchil, he shouldn't say brachos. Even the Ramah in Sif Gimel suggests that if he can follow along all the words by reading from a sitter, then maybe he can daven. But in Darkei Moshe, he says don't rely on it. He's just trying to justify a minhag, but it hasn't been written by anybody else, so you shouldn't rely on that. And if a person is at Shechrus or Shalot, which is defined by the Rambam as Buhu HaShikr Sha'ose Ve'in Yodea Ma'ose Ve'in Ma'as of Klum, and your person is a blackout drunk, he wakes up the next morning, he's like, where was I? How did I get here? What just happened? Right? Meaning, and he has very vague memories of what happened while he was drunk. So that's Shechrus or Shalot. V'hu kishota o kekatan pachos mi ben sheish. So none of his brachos or tefillahs count. Then not only no davening, no tefillah or whatever. Let's assume people are not, let's hope that people are not getting to that level. But even if you're not getting to that level, drinking even a revius you're not allowed to do before davening. So you have that problem as well. And then you have hashkafic considerations as well. First of all, you have the slippery slope, as if this isn't already bad enough. Meaning, from what I understand, again, from asking around a little bit, that it is not uncommon for people who have this practice, that they have cocktails before Shabbos, that they also have brownies before Shabbos, because once you're having cocktails, you might as well have some brownies also. Now that is not just Stam Duncan Hines, that they add something to the Duncan Hines mix. So that is that person's going to be completely high and not able to daven. And that's the kind of avira that is being created. Now the Mishnah says also that going back to like what we're talking about when it comes to eating before Shabbos, that if a person is having a major suda before Shabbos, one of the three reasons we gave that you're not allowed to have a suda before Shabbos is that by doing so you're going to neglect your responsibilities to prepare for Shabbos. The Mishnah says in Parak Bab Madlikin that Shloshes Dvarim Sarachodim Lomer Sof Pesach Shabbos in Chashecha Iravtem Isartem Hadlikwa Saner. You have to ask: did you make an eruv? Did you take all the maestros? And don't forget to light the candles. So the Gemara over there, Masechta Shabbos, says that you need to say those things b'nichusa. That when you say those things in your household, on Erev Shabbos, you need to say them nicely. And in that way, you'll fulfill the pasuk v'yadata ki shalom alecha. That will be a skula for shalom bayis. I remember Rav Shachtu told us that someone once asked, there was a chassid that went to the Rebbe. I forgot which Rebbe, which type of chassidus, but he said, a chassid went to the Rebbe. He said, every Erev Shabbos, a makbid, I say it b'nichusa. He said, and I leave the house, and my wife is still so angry at me. I'm having gefarlich shalom bayis problems. So the Rebbe said, maybe describe to me what's going on in the house when all of this is happening. So he says, it's pashut. I leave the house 45 minutes before Shabbos so I could do my hachanas for tefillah. So I could do my hachanas for mincha in shul, and I could learn a little bit of chassidus or whatever. And there are two kids that are fighting. There's a baby was just taken out of the bath, but he's pooping himself already after being taken, just after being cleaned. There's stuff overflowing on the stove because it's burning. The lights aren't yet set for Shabbos, and I say, Isartem, Iravtem, Halikos, and then I leave, and my wife gets so angry at me. She says, idiot, of course she does, because yeah, that's not what you're supposed to be. The whole thing of Benichusa is that you're doing your job also. So go help around the house. Don't just say things nicely and then escape. It's a terrible idea for a person to excuse themselves from their household when things get intense right before Shabbos, and helping hand is needed. Sometimes people they don't like the intensity. It's just too intense for me. I got to get away from this. It's intense because you're not helping. If you'd help, it wouldn't be so intense. So that's also part of the equation. If someone told me in a certain city, in a particular city outside of the New York area, there was a group of chevra that wanted to start like an Eish Kodesh style minyan, you know, more singing, more dancing, Leibedik, and you know, more emphasis on Neo Chasidus or whatever else. And Moshe Weinberger had come to visit the city. So this chevra that wanted to start this minyan, they wanted to start this shul, they asked for a meeting with Rav Weinberger. Rav Weinberger was kind enough to give them a half hour of his time. And they started asking him, you know, they told him their plans and they want to do this, but the more established shuls in the neighborhood are upset about it and they think it's going to take all the young people away from the more established shuls, v'chule, v'chule. So for a half hour, Rabbi Weinberger was being mechazik them and he was telling them, no, people need this. People need a little more ruchnius. They need a little more energy and passion in their avodas Hashem. You're going to see it's going to be successful and the other shuls are going to change also because of kinesof from Tabr Chachma and they're also going to enhance their tefillah. And he was giving them chizik for a half hour. And then at some point, like at around the half hour mark, just before the meeting was supposed to end, someone said, yeah, and we have Bain beforehand. He's like, Bain? What's Bain? What does that mean? So he said, yeah, you know, we drink a little bit before Kabbalah Shabbos. And like, immediately they said, it was like, he said, what? Where does it say in Shulchan Aruch that you're allowed to drink before Shabbos? Where does it say in Shulchan Aruch that you're allowed to do this? You're a bunch of children. You're not allowed to start a minyan. It's usher for you to start a shul. Who do you think you are? You're going to call that avodas Hashem because you like to get drunk with your friends? And he just like, for 20 minutes, he said, Eish Kodesh is a dry shul. You know, like people don't realize. They see the hilulas and everyone's all excited. They're actually excited because there's actual ruchnius there. It's not because they're high, right? Meaning if the only way you're able to do that is because you're high, then that's a real problem. So they said like on that chevra chat, the next day it was like, guys, we're not going to do Bain anymore. Meaning, obviously, you're not going to do that. We asked Rav Asher Weiss. We had the privilege. Many rabbanim throughout the country had the privilege of having a full day with Rav Asher Weiss on Tuesday. Rabbi Shai Shechter arranges when Rav Asher comes in, so he had like 50-60 rabbis with Rav Asher Weiss speaking to us like all day long. It was amazing. And I mean, it's mamish. He's like such a mayan hamizgaber. It's unbelievable. It's like every time it's like jaw-dropping. But so we asked him about the use of alcohol and marijuana and, you know, whether there's a difference. One in the Q&A session, you know, because the taina is alcohol, now that marijuana is legal, the whole difference between them was that one was legal, one was illegal. Now marijuana is legal, so maybe just like we drink alcohol, we should drink, we should be able to have marijuana. And Rav Asher said that he said it's funny because on his way, he was being driven in the car and he saw a sign for kosher cannabis. And Rav Asher said, I didn't check out what the Hashgacha was. I don't know if it's the Yedu Charedis or the OU or whatever he said. But he said, when people ask about the connection to alcohol and marijuana, there's nobody that says that you can make Kiddush or Abdullah on pot. Right? No one says that you're allowed to do that. It's a huge embarrassment, he said, that alcohol use is so acceptable in the yeshiva world. He said, a frum Jew drinks at Kiddusha v'Avdalta. And a frum Jew drinks schnapps after fish on Shabbos. That's it. Kiddusha v'Avdalta. By Kiddush, by Avdalta Kosos, okay? And a little schnapps after the fish. Rav Asher said that his father used to say that there's a minhag to have schnapps after the fish because he said, the Shtikl Torah that when Yonah was swallowed by the dog, so Yonah davened and then the dog had to spit him out. So the minhag is to have schnapps after fish because the fish knows that lesson. He remembers from when Yonah was inside of him. So you got to get the fish drunk so that he can't daven because otherwise he's going to daven and then you're going to have to spit him out. So that's what they drink. Okay. Okay, that's not the real reason why I have schnapps after fish. It was just a funny thing that he said. So, and Rav Asher said it's such an embarrassment that at Yeshiva Chasana they have the most expensive scotch and bourbon. He said at a chuppah he was at recently, the father of the kala was already drunk by the time it was chuppah, and it was an awful bizayon. He was tripping over himself at the chuppah because he was making l'chaims with all of his friends at the chasana's tish. You know, he said the chazal are mishabeach wine, and they teach us that nichnas yayin yatsa sod. The psukim refer to three different sodas. There's sod yisharim and yireim and neviim. And yisharim, yireim, neviim are rashi tevas yayin. Throughout the ages, if a Jew drank wine, sod yisharim, sod yireim, sod neviim is what came out. But if that's not what comes out, then that's not what's supposed to, then that's not what should go in, and the yayin should not be nichnas to begin with. He said that it's true that in many countries they legalize marijuana, but what they legalize has absolutely nothing to do with us. There are so many political pressures, and there's so many, you know, he said it gives a person a high, it makes them feel good, but we've been around for thousands of years without marijuana to try to stay away from it, aside from cancer patients and other medical purposes where it's prescribed. And Rav Asher says he happens to believe that it is addictive, even though people tell you it's not addictive. Ain't simcha el basar v'yayin. He said that a Rav told him that he was doing mechiras chametz, and a person filled out his form, and he wrote $90,000 of chametz. So the Rav asked the guy, like, what factory do you own, you know, that has $90,000 of chametz? He said, no, that's my schnapps collection. $90,000 of chametz. So Rav Asher said, you could, from person, you could support B'nai Torah with such money. So Rav Asher said, unfortunately, the guy sold it back to the guy after Pesach. The guy should have kept it. Real dveikus is achieved with learning and davening, and also singing and dancing, Takarish Baruch Hu. But any mystical experience with being high on drugs or high on alcohol, just because that's not genuine ruchnius. Halacha should dictate the way we live, what we do, and what we abstain from doing. And therefore, it seems that such a minhag, aside from not being, in the spirit of what people think, they think they're mimicking Eish Kodesh or whatever. You know, like, it's very far from mimicking what actually goes on with holy rabbis like Rav Moshe Weinberger, meaning it's very, very far from that. And it actually gives the whole, whatever you call it, Neo-Hasidus movement a terrible name, that when people do this under that banner, right, they say, oh yeah, that's why we're doing it, because we're Neo-Hasidim, and that's what you're supposed to do if you're a Neo-Hasid. That's ridiculous. So it's also very far from what the Shulchan Aruch of HaKadosh Baruch Hu expects from us. So that's why it's a pretty terrible move. Okay, everyone have a wonderful Shabbos.